Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast for the 23rd of October 2013. So joining me for this edition of the podcast, AV Forums assistant editor Steve Withers.
Now, Yahoo without sin cast the first stone.
News editor Mark Hodgkinson.
Biology and the prejudice of others conspired to keep us childless.
Games editor Mark Botwright.
You hear that? We're using code names.
And audio reviewer Ed Selly.
And here's the TV. 2 hours a day, either educational or football, so you don't ruin your appreciation of the finer things.
So welcome along to another podcast. If you missed the special podcast where we discuss the new AV Forums and the new editorial, where have you been? It is available for download. It went live on Sunday. If you haven't had a listen, go and have a listen if you're interested in finding out about the new forums and the new editorial. And we've discussed it enough in that podcast, so we're not going to discuss it any further now, other than to say it's coming soon. So let's move on to hardware news to kick us off this week. And Mark, you've been having a look at a 4K TV, the F9000. It's one that Steve's reviewed in the past, but we're going to give Steve's vocal cords a rest on this podcast. So you tell us all about it.
I've been lucky enough to spend the last couple of weeks with the 65-inch version of the F9000. I think the thing that strikes me most is it's just a stunning piece of engineering, really. It's beautifully made. Comes with very designer packaging inside. It's very heavy, as I can testify, having just put it back in the box today and loaded it up on a van. Starting with the positives, because it is mostly positive, and I was really impressed with the scaling. Even of, you know, a DVD, it looked pretty impressive. 1080p content looked really, really nice. During the time I had it, I actually caught up with Game of Thrones. I was a bit behind the game with that one, but I got the Blu-ray of the first series, and I've gone through the whole of the first series on this TV, and it's treated me very well. Particularly with 24p material, it looks stunning, and the black levels are very, very good. The uniformity, which is it was astounding. I've had 32-inch TVs that couldn't get near the uniformity of this one. It was almost perfect. I mean, you could, even from slightly off angles, there was virtually no light pooling or any other nasties. The dimming system is incredible. It's only edge lit, but I think it's called Smart LED in the menus. You can whack that up high quite happily. Makes the blacks even more impressive. Doesn't crush any detail. Just fantastic. Occasionally it'll get caught out. Flames and flickers. A lot of that at Game of Thrones. Occasionally it'll just sort of interfere with the rest of the screen and make it flash. But generally it's worth keeping on, which is quite rare. We'd normally advise a low setting or off with these dimming systems, but this one's something special. Probably the biggest negative is with sporting content. So while it was here, 1080i50 stuff, so I watched two England games and a game on Saturday on BT Sport. I've forgotten what it was now. Newcastle and Liverpool. And it gets very, very blurry. So it's crying out for those higher frame rates that the standards might promise. But other than that, it's an incredibly impressive piece of kit. Now, I think that the major stumbling block is it costs you $5,000. So it's $5,000 for a 65-inch TV. And okay, you can argue that being the start of the UHD revolution, as it were, that's not a bad price, and it isn't, but I can go out and buy a 65-inch VT65 for considerably less, and that's probably where I would go at this stage, given the lack of content. I got a little bit of content, for the UHD content from Samsung, just a couple of clips, literally, though, which looked fantastic, you know, and didn't lose any detail from very, very close. There's a real texture to the pictures, a real sense of solidity. Extra detail, maybe from within 6 foot with really good eyesight. It looked stunning, of course. Just can't wait to see more, really. It's difficult to evaluate without having 1080p content side by side of the exact same nature to compare to. But yeah, incredibly impressive. Yeah, and sorry to see it go.
Oh, good. Not just me who likes it, then. What do you think of the Kinect box?
Given a bit of an unusual situation, isn't it, just having these things for a couple of weeks? So it was a bit of a pain in the arse to me, but if I was integrating it into my system full time, then that's a great idea. Yeah, it slots in nicely, very tidy. If you go wall mounting, then you've just got the one cable, of course, going up to hide. Yeah, good piece of thinking from Samsung. Gets a bit warm, doesn't it?
It does get a bit warm, yes. I did point that out to them, actually. I'm assuming the reason that it gets a little bit warm is because there is a processor in there and no cooling, as far as I can work out. But that was the only comment that I noticed when I was testing the 55-inch, was that it got a little toasty on occasion.
Yeah, but difficult to fault, really, otherwise. You know, obviously all the smart features are all superb and Samsung-like. Yeah, difficult to fault apart from the price, really, when you consider what you can get, you know, for considerably less.
Okay, so that's the Samsung F9000 65-inch. The review is going up very soon. And who knows, it might actually be on the new site.
Yeah, who knows?
So. Still staying with 4K, a new story today from 3dfocus.co.uk. They had an interview with the BBC, who say they're not going to shoot in 4K with license fee money. Explain this one, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what they said. They said that they don't feel that currently they can shoot with future-proofing in mind. In other words, shooting at 4K for programs being made with funding based on the license fee. Their argument being that that most people can't, obviously, perception of Mark last week, most people can't watch 4K content, and there's no real delivery system yet, and they haven't agreed any standards yet. So their argument is that until such time as that, you know, there's an established base of established user base of 4K TVs and an established set of standards, the best thing to do is to just continue shooting at 1080p and only shoot at 4K. I guess when they say non-license fee stuff will be what, testing, and maybe any something that was intended for a commercial purpose rather than something of license fee.
BBC Worldwide, they'll be the primary drivers of BBC UHD content. So that's obviously the commercial arm. So they're free to make. Well, we know they're doing nature documentaries already. So, and also through the new iPlayer.
The nature documentaries really lend themselves to using 4K. I mean, stuff that I've seen in 4K from some nature documentaries has looked absolutely spectacular. So you can see that would be a clear advantage using it for that. I guess what they basically mean is we're not going to see EastEnders in 4K anytime soon.
I just don't get this argument about, there's not an audience there for it, so they're not going to do it. They did 3D, and there wasn't an audience for
that's
it.
That's exactly what
they
I think.
Very minimal 3D, didn't they? They only did like a little bit. It wasn't like it was loads of
it. Yeah, but they still did it, and it was license fee.
Well, yeah, but you see, there was a way of delivering 3D, wasn't there, over the BBC HD channel. And there were 3D TVs in the marketplace, and a fairly large number of them, even if people weren't using them as such. I guess you could say that right now, at least for the next year or so. It does seem a bit short-sighted, because, I mean, we are moving into a 4K world, so why not shoot in 4K now? Even if you're not broadcasting, you can always have it for later.
It just means that Sky's going to get the jump again. You know, they're the ones that are going to push this technology, as they have with HD. Yeah, you know, they've got the financial clout. They can re-equip their studios and their editing facilities and so on. They got the financial backing to do that and a platform to use for that. So it's a bit of a shame, because BBC used to be real innovators when it came to technology, but it seems to be that there's an awful lot of focus now on how the license fee money is being spent, and that could stop them being at the cutting edge like they used to be in the past.
Yeah, they seem more concerned about actually getting that content out there and sold, as it were, through there's another story today leading on from that, really. It's they're not launching the BBC Global iPlayer anymore. So they've been trialing this thing for 2 years as an attempt to gain some revenues through BBC Worldwide, and they've pulled the plug on that now, and they're going to concentrate all their efforts into bbc.com, the website where there will be all the iPlayer content available to different territories and different markets as a paid for download or rental. So that they seem to be more focused on innovating, or well, not innovating so much as capitalizing on their digital output rather than innovating the content.
Well, that's good.
They are kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, though, really, here, aren't they? I mean, the BBC's coming for a lot of scrutiny over how it's spending license payers' money. Now, from our perspective, it's obviously disappointing that they're staying put, but you can just envisage the headlines where, you know, BBC spending your money on programming for people that can afford a television that costs several thousand pounds. It, you know, it's emotive and it's largely guff, but it would be enough that they are, I think, at the moment feeling fairly risk averse and they're going to shy away from it. So
yeah, you're probably right. The BBC Trust has what's called a public value test as to whether things are worth the funding or not, and you'd probably have to say at this stage you could understand why they wouldn't pass that test.
What will be interesting to see is whether any of the other free we leave Sky to one side as a slightly different undertaking with obviously a different way of paying for things. I think it will be interesting to see if any of the other terrestrial broadcasters start sneaking stuff in, and whether that urges the BBC to greater efforts. I personally don't think that they see themselves as competing with Sky in any conventional sense of the word. So I think the push would actually be from the Channel 4s of this world or something like that if they start to introduce a limited amount of 4K content.
I can't see it from anywhere else other than Channel 4, certainly not ITV or Channel 4.
actually, Dave have been a pioneer here because they shot the last the last Red Dwarf series on the Red Epic. I don't think the Red Dwarf and Red Epic thing was intentional.
Dave in 4K.
Quite a nice crossover now I think about it. But yes, Dave shot that. They funded the last series, didn't they? And they were shot on 4K cameras, believe it or not.
I'll take everything I've ever said about Dave back.
To wrap up on hardware news, 4K that isn't 4K. The reason we went with the podcast early last week was that I went off to Marbella to have a look at the new JVC projectors. Obviously, we'd been under NDA. But I think we're free now, Steve, to talk about what we've seen with the JVCs and obviously discuss the white elephant that's in the room that everybody knows about. It's been hyped to high heaven at the minute, and that's the fact that they're not native 4K projectors. You know, after having seen them and understanding a little bit more about the technology, I'm inclined to say that I don't think it's as big a story as it's been made out in maybe the more mainstream press.
I mean, we've already mentioned it before when Mark's talking about the Samsung, but there is obviously a dearth of 4K content, and there's going to be a dearth of 4K content for a considerable period of time, just in terms of agreeing standards, in terms of delivery. You know, we're not going to see regular, you know, large quantity 4K content for at least another year, if not two. So on that basis, whilst, you know, I've seen both projectors and the VW 500 is a fantastic projector, you know, its major selling point is 4K and therefore future-proof isn't going to come into play for at least another 2 years, which does mean that if you're thinking of buying a projector right now, what's more important? The ability to play 4K content possibly at some future date, or the ability to deliver a spankingly good 1080p image right now? And certainly, if you're looking at 1080p image quality, and particularly black levels, then the JVCs remain the king of the hill. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a very valid point, Phil. And I guess you have to add up, sort of measure up your own priorities. And if what you're looking for is a really good 1080p image right now, then you should be looking at the JVCs. Also look at the Sony as well, of course, but in terms of absolute black levels, then that's going to be the clear winner. If future-proofing and 4K is incredibly important to you, then currently you only really have one choice, which is the VW 500.
Yeah, it's I don't think JVC do themselves any favour by calling eShift 4K eShift. But then at the same time, it is 4K resolution, as in terms of its 3840 by 2160. So in those terms, that's what the projector's putting out using the eShift. And basically eShift is it's in the optical section of the projector, and it basically shifts one 1080p image slightly diagonally, so it creates the resolution. So what it's doing is it'll take a native 4K signal in up to 60p, and what it's doing is it takes one frame at 1080, it takes another frame at 1080, it joins them back together and splits them diagonally and then projects it. So it's not native 4K, not 4K as we know it, but it's JVC's slant on it, it's their technology, but it does confuse the consumer and confuses the dealers as well.
I think, in all honesty, I think they've been extremely naughty referring to this generation and last 2 years, in fact, isn't it? So for the last 2 years, referring to them as 4K projectors is a bit naughty, because they are not native 4K projectors. And what they, and you said, Phil, what they're doing, you know, is effectively using this device to increase resolution from a 1080p panel. I think they should, and I, you know, to a certain extent, I'm surprised they've been allowed to get away with it from a marketing perspective, because it is misleading and it's not strictly
it's,
true.
It's the name of the device, so that's how they get away with it. The name of the device, 4K eShift.
eShift.
And it is their technology as well. So it's something that they've developed with NHK. So it's their technology as well. So you're not going to find it in any other projectors out there. But the way that it has been described in the marketing materials is a little bit misleading.
I mean, it's an interesting technology, and we've both seen it, over the last 2 years, and it's been a useful stopgap between 1080p and what will ultimately be, a 4K future, and it does work very well. I mean, certainly, you do get a perception of higher resolution, although obviously it's not genuinely that. It looks very good. I always found the motion hand to be slightly better with the eShift device as well. I really like the image that it produces. And the new generation, this next generation that's being launched now, because you can accept a 4K signal as well. Although, of course, it's going to be down-rest and up-rest again. I think it's been an interesting stopgap. It's just going to be difficult for them to continue using it, I think, now that presumably we'll see more 4K, native 4K projectors coming on the market, hopefully.
The other interesting thing that was brought up during the press conference, the question was asked, why are you not just producing a 4K native 4K projector? And their reasoning was, well, we'd have to start from the ground up. These things are not cheap, and it would probably cost about $20,000, so about the same price as a VW1000 or 1100. So, again, they've got this technology, so why not use it? There is no 4K content at the minute. The standards haven't been finalised. They've got Kraken projectors, and they can do this little fancy upscale, upshift thing. Why not? Why not do it?
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see the logic. They are going to have a bit of a struggle, I think. I mean, we talked about it at the beginning, the elephant in the room, but the fact is, however Sony are doing it, they've got a 4K, a native 4K projector in the market for $8,500, and that is a particularly attractive price point, smack in the middle of JVC's 700 and 900 series projectors. That is going to hit them bad. Whichever way you cut it, that's not going to be good news for them. Whether that makes sense, whether that's fair, is a different question entirely. But from the consumer's perspective, where numbers, as we all know, sell easily.
I don't think you've been fair in this yet. Sony been very clever. They want to dominate this market. They're releasing this VW500. It's a native 4K projector. They're losing a ton of money on each one they sell. You just have to look at the technology that's on board, the glass that's being used, even though it's cut down from the high-end model and so on. They're losing money on each one they sell because they want to dominate the market, and they have the muscle to do it. They have the
financial clout.
Well, they've got the financial clout and they've got the fact that they have the production line set up, because they already make professional. Well, the JVC do it as well, maybe not to such large numbers, but... They have the means to come into the market and sell something at a loss to push it, so they become the go-to model in the market. And you can't blame Sony for that.
I think it's a brave strategy, and I think it might even work.
Yeah, it might. And there's a lot of hype around the VW500. And, I try not to get involved. And I was saying this to you earlier, Steve. I like to take a step back and look at the whole picture, pun intended. To see just where the market is going. Now, Sony are playing a blinder there, because they've released it at the same time that they know that JVC are going to bring their new line out, and JVC can't compete with a native 4K at the minute. So I think it's going to be down to getting a demo of both and going with the one that you think is going to suit your needs at the end of the day. And I've got to say, having seen the projectors, the JVCs, I've seen them twice now, playing the same material, playing native 4K as well as 1080p, and I've got to say, they look absolutely sublime. It's that JVC image, the sheer dynamic range, the native contrast on them, the black levels, the shadow detail. It's just such a nice filmic image to look at. So they're not suddenly going to be bad projectors just because they're not native 4K, and let's face it, 4K at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have seen both now. And I can say that I was very impressed with the JVC. I was equally as impressed with the VW500. I guess we'll have to wait. I mean, you can never quite tell from a demo. We need to put them under the microscope to really see how they perform. All I can say is if you're in that kind of £7,000 to £9,000 price bracket, you're sport for choice at the moment. They've got some really cracking projectors coming out of that price point. Actually, when this podcast goes out, which is Wednesday night, some of the forum members will be getting a chance to actually get a first look at the BW500 as well.
Yeah, that's right. And it'll be interesting to see what the feedback is.
Yeah, what the feedback is. Yeah.
On that, it will be interesting to see. It depends, you know, what native material they're going to show them. If it's the usual clips that we've all seen a million times now with travelogues and so on, it gets a bit boring. Let's have some film content to look at, please, when we're reviewing these things.
I mean, the owner's film studio, you'd think it couldn't be that hard to get some film content, but apparently it is tricky.
They're selling a 4K, the 4K player in the US. Why can't they dump that in with some review, you know, stuff so you can have a look at it? Anyway, that's 4K heavy hardware news this week. Let's move on. We're going to talk about games news next. So moving on to games, Mark, there's been some delays on the next-gen release games, and I understand at least one of these was supposed to be a release day title.
Both were. Watch Dogs is probably the big wee. The big wee. Watch Dogs is probably the big one from Ubisoft. It was not only going to be a launch game, but it was also going to be in the bundles with PlayStation 4s. So it tells you that Sony were pretty confident that it was going to go gold soon and that it would be there on day one. But Ubisoft have taken the decision that they'd rather have more time supposedly to polish the game, which is kind of the standard reply. Their shares slumped a bit afterwards after the announcement, but it seemed actually it's probably just a bit of a smart business decision. I mean, that it's a kind of open world game and it's going to be based on a lot of the same mechanics as one of their established franchises, the Assassin's Creed games, which will be releasing at the same time anyway. So why would you release two open world games that would have perhaps similar aspects at the same time? You're only going to cannibalize your own sales. You know, the fact is that there's going to be a fairly decent lineup for both consoles at launch, reasonable amount of exclusives, certainly on the Xbox One. But you've got the big shooters out there, you've got big sports games, you've got driving games, you've got the kind of standard core crowd and casual gamers covered throughout all of those. So it seems to make sense. I mean, it's being pushed back to basically it should come just after the next financial year starts. So it's a nice way to kind of push things onto another spreadsheet and make your accounts look nice. It was a strange one simply because, as I say, it was supposed to be in with the bundles. So you assume that, you know, everyone was fairly confident that it would be there. But as I say, it didn't make too much sense cannibalizing their own sales. And if there were issues with it, then if the Assassin's Creed franchise is slowly kind of drawing a little bit more criticism and fans are kind of falling away from it, then it makes sense to try and push one last one out the door and then move everyone onto another franchise.
I have to say I'm disappointed. I didn't realize it was based on the same underpinnings. I don't know. I'm possibly in a minority of one here, but I've loathed every second of every moment I've ever tried to play Assassin's Creed, and I thought this Watch Dogs thing looked quite good.
It does. I mean, when I say it's based on the same kind of thing,
it's the same engine.
Open world game. You know, you see a lot of similarities with exploration and kind of contextual events and there's not a great deal of interaction, shall we say. It doesn't seem like there's a huge amount going on, say, within the city. It looks gorgeous. It seems like there's a lot to explore there. But little things, you know, the kind of graphics overlay in little places just kind of hinted at the sci-fi-ness of Assassin's Creed being shifted over perhaps to a different franchise. Like they'd split it at some point and decided to put in slightly more interactive elements with Watch Dogs. And it did look the more promising series, but I still think it's going to end up, a lot of the criticism is going to be that it's going to base on the same underpinnings, which is a certain amount of exploration, but very, very simple interaction. Press A to do this and that kind of thing. And the other big delay was Drive Club, which again, PS4 launch game was supposed to be also one of the freebies with PlayStation Plus. Once again, though, pretty much a solid business decision. If it's not ready, why release a game that you might be putting out a PlayStation Plus edition that causes bad word of mouth if it's not perfectly polished. And you've already got, from third-party developers, you've got your shooters covered, you've got your driving game, you've got Need for Speed, you've got your FIFA there, which a huge amount of people will be picking up anyway. And so perhaps the only real disappointment about that is the fact that they're switching it out for Contrast, which looks a little bit noir-y, puzzle-esque, platformer, story-based, which probably isn't going to sell new customers to the idea of PlayStation Plus in the same way that a kind of quite in-your-face, adrenaline-fueled driving game might have done. But it pushes another exclusive, though, into the kind of 2014 lineup. So, therefore, Sony will have Infamous and Drive Club and The Order, as well as, you know, other kind of big third-party games like Watch Dogs and Destiny. And the fact is, when you're pretty much guaranteed to be selling out a launch anyway, you know, it kind of makes sense not to tread too much over all the games that you're going to be pretty much guaranteed to be selling. So Call of Duty is going to run roughshod over quite a few of those games, and it'd be sad to see them kind of fall by the wayside just for the sake of that.
Yeah, I'd agree. Exciting new IP like this, you don't want it buried, do you really? So yeah, I think there's always some delays, aren't there, associated with new consoles, and challenging games are so complex to build these days that, you know, particularly open world games, I guess, that best not to have something glitchy and rubbish out there. Get it finished and get it out there when it's ready.
So Mark, moving on, Microsoft have set up a fact site attempting to readdress some of the old policies that people obviously heard during the initial launch push for the console. They're trying to basically set the record straight, is that right?
Yeah, it's a kind of interesting approach. It's questionable why they didn't do it some time ago, but perhaps the waters were so muddied that, you know, anything would have been shouted down maybe a month ago. But yes, they've kind of released these different little tidbits trying to address the confusion over what old policies they'd done a 180 on and which ones they hadn't. It does leave you quite confused still, though, perhaps, with certain aspects like how many things they still have locked behind the paywall of a gold subscription. That kind of thing is a little bit trickier to try and address. But the big ones do come across as a little bit odd, like saying Kinect can be unplugged and, you know, you don't have to bother setting it up. It could, you know, you can leave it in the box, which leads to the question, well, you know, why am I paying 80 extra quid to have it there? And then they're kind of touting next-gen graphics at 1080p and 60 frames per second, which, you know, a lot of people kind of hoped would be the standard here. And the fact that you can boast as anything that you can actually trade in games, resell them and lend them tells you that perhaps, you know, you went a cock up too far beforehand. But, you know, it's commendable that they're actually trying to set the record straight on this, even if some of the kind of little infographics looked like rush spellings and poor Photoshop skills. But other than that, I think it's still going to lead to a certain amount of confusion, as I say, with exactly what you're paying for with gold and how much is free, because it's really hard for anyone to try and remember exactly what things they've gone back on and what things they haven't. You kind of almost assume as if they've said, right, that's it, fine, we've gone back on everything, we'll do a 180 on everything, and now it's literally just the alternative to the PlayStation 4. So it's everything there, consider it the same, but in a Microsoft branded box, whereas, you know, it really isn't. You know, they're still going to be locking certain things away. I think a game DVR will still be behind gold subscription, and then there's a question about Skype and Netflix and the One Guide.
Well, they said Skype, and actually says here that Skype will require gold somewhere down here on that site you've just linked, so that's definite, needs gold. And I'd imagine Netflix will be on the paywall, because it has been with the Xbox 360, hasn't it? Stuff like that is just silly.
No, I had to say, I was looking, I saw this mentioned in the agenda we have before the podcast, and can I be the first to express my disappointment that Xbox One facts is absolutely nothing like Chuck Norris facts? I mean, I thought they were just going to print a site, you know, the Xbox One is the only console capable of assisting you in traveling through time, or, you know,
the Xbox One can count to infinity twice.
Yeah, you know, I thought they, at the very least, it's all, as you say, it's been thrown together in a rush. I mean, I know I'm probably the worst person for looking at typos and stuff. But it just, I would have thought they could at least have a bit more of a laugh. I mean, I know self-mockery is a dangerous thing. I mean, Gerald Ratner will tell you that it's dangerous to not take yourself entirely seriously all the time. But nonetheless, I think this would have been a fantastic opportunity to do a sort of, you know, truth versus legend and all the rest of it, and just be slightly more flippant about the whole thing, because as Mark says, it still doesn't tell you all the things that it's setting out to, so it's a bit of a wasted opportunity in both actual consumer information and comedy.
I think the problem there is the fact that if they don't play it so perfectly straight-faced, there is that sense, almost a little bit of Poe's Law with Microsoft's messaging on the one, whereby there have been some people who've kind of photoshopped it already to do, you know, fairly facetious and derogatory versions of the same ads. And it usually leads to someone saying, is that real? You know, so it just kind of goes to show that people have kind of, they think so little of Microsoft's marketing with regards to the one now that in fact almost anything will be believed, so they have to play it so absolutely deadpan straight faced now and try to kind of, you know, talk up everything that the box has, because if they don't then they're accused of kind of hiding something, and if they go too far to try and sell things, then they're accused of just, you know, marketing blurb and talking up the cloud and a balanced architecture and various other kind of new terms to try and take away the fact that they're probably going to have the less powerful box out on the market.
Okay, Mark, to finish on games news, and this is something I'm hoping is going to be at CES, so I can have a go of it. Oculus Rift, it's one of these things that when you see it, you think, what the hell? And when you see people's reactions, you think, oh, I want to have a go at that. But what's the story behind this?
Oh, it's just John Carmack, who's legendary developer from id Software, you know, behind Doom and the like, is now chief technology officer at Oculus Rift HQ, and he reckons that one day we could see it as a standalone unit running Android, so you'd be free from wires, probably obviously have to have more simplistic software, but it's one of those things. He's one of those guys who kind of tries to be, he's often a little bit cynical of other technology, but the fact that he's getting behind Oculus Rift is, you know, pretty fantastic for anyone who wants it to be a success. Very much a visionary figure when it comes to things like hardware and how things might be working. They want to iron out, obviously the first hurdle is ironing out head tracking and the like, because the worst thing you could do is release it and have everyone get absolute, you know, motion sickness and the like and never go back to it. But it would be absolutely fantastic if you could have a standalone unit, slap on the VR headset, and just kind of keep walking.
Into a tree.
Yeah.
You couldn't see what you're actually doing.
Down a staircase in your flat.
Well, if you've ever seen the omnidirectional treadmill, then you'd know that that's not always a problem.
I've got to say, it's one of these things I'm dying to have a go of now, so I'm hoping it's going to be at CES this year, so I can have a quick go of that. Anyway, that wraps up the games news. We'll be back in a sec with tech news. So moving on to tech news, Apple have a big launch, which will have happened by the time this podcast goes out. iPad 5, iPad Mini 2 are the two touted products, but possibly new MacBooks and the Mac Pro. What do we think of this one, Steve?
Well, no real surprises, I think, Phil, to be honest. You know, it's been fairly well telegraphed what they're going to announce tomorrow. You're going to get the iPad 5, which looks like it's taking a lot of its design cues from the iPad Mini. So they've got the chamfered edges and the reflective Apple logo at the back. A bit thinner, but still got the same 9.7-inch Retina display. You've got the newer second-generation iPad Mini as well, and some new iPods. So, you know, you kind of think, yeah, big deal. You know, just more of the same, but with little changes here and there. I guess the big news from our perspective, because we both use, you've got a MacBook Pro and I've got an iMac, is that Mavericks will be released as well, hopefully by the end of the month. So we'll get a new operating system for our actual computers. And everyone get another look at the all-new MacBook Pro, which was obviously sort of trailered at the WWDC.
The Mac Pro, not the MacBook. Mac Pro.
Sorry, did I say MacBook?
Yeah. You did, yeah.
The all-new...
Yeah.
That's confusing.
Darth Vader's ashtray. That's what it looks like. Mac Pro looks interesting, and Mavericks offering performance upgrades and also better battery life. So that'll be interesting to see if that's true. So anyway, yeah,
the Mac Pro looks good, but it's going to be hellishly expensive, isn't it?
It is. I mean,
I probably missed this whilst I was writing my computer. The new iPad Mini. Is there any word on it actually having a sort of semi-acceptable screen resolution?
Yeah, I think that's good. It's got to be, hasn't it? With the Nexus 7 releasing with its high-res screen, then I think that's a certainty. It'll be a.
I mean, because it struck me that they'd sell the iPad, the original version of the iPad Mini, to everyone that would just go, "Oh, it's something new and shiny," and then we'd actually see a proper version of it second time out. But
they might keep the iPad Mini on as a cheaper product and have the iPad Mini.
Yeah, that's true.
Like they've done with the 5C, whatever it's 5C.
Well, the iPad Mini, I mean, that would work quite nicely. It does quite well in the audio industry because it's, you know, you get people who are sort of spending £2,000-£3,000 on a streamer, and the price of an iPad Mini is neither here nor there in the great scheme of sort of supporting ancillaries, and they use it exclusively as a remote. Yeah. So,
well, they make fantastic remotes. The little tablets are perfect.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, so they might keep that on in to compete with the cheaper Android tablets.
Although some of those Android tablets are getting ridiculously cheap now. They're going to be giving them away with boxes of cornflakes, the way things are going.
I sense a segue.
Oh, is that a segue?
Boom, boom. I'm a professional. Actually, sorry, just going back to the Apple thing for a second.
De-segueing.
I'm de-segueing.
Backing out of the segue.
out of that particular one to let Phil segue back in again later. But obviously, Phil mentioned at the beginning that you know, there's a possibility for updated MacBook Pros and Mac Mini, and also possibly updated version of Apple TV, but not an Apple television, as far as anyone can tell, or even an iWatch for that matter. So kind of a total lack of any real innovation coming from Apple at the moment, I think. They better come up with something flashy,
it'd be
cool.
Interesting
really soon.
To see what the shares do for following the event, because if they don't launch anything new, there's going to be moaning on Wall Street. You can bet your life.
Anyway, who about you? Right, segue.
Well, that's dead now.
Yeah, I did the segue, and I de-segued.
So going back to the segue, which was happening nicely until Steve ruined it, like he ruins everything, Argos launching new tablet to undercut Tesco, Mark.
Yeah, simple as that, really. Cheap Android tablet, £99. Basically, it was a 1.6 dual-core processor, 8 GB of internal memory. Screen resolution, nothing to write home about, 1024x600. But the fact of the matter is, with Christmas coming up, they're going to sell shitloads of these things because they're plastering them all over the front of the catalogues. And when you go in store, they're there and they're in your face. And if you've just been in Tesco's and you've seen the Huddle at £119.99 and you see that one at Argos £99.99, then you're probably inclined to get that for you as a Christmas present. Probably an ideal kids' prezzy, this. The magic £100 barrier broken.
I think we might have broken that by quite a bit, actually. This link Ed just sent me is true.
It's a spoof, darling.
That's good.
I won't click on it just yet, then.
Oh, of course. I guess I've just seen the little bit.
No, a little tablet.
A little tablet for
£12.99. Yeah, well,
it's only a matter of time, probably, though, isn't it?
That will also almost certainly happen. Aldi are quite keen on getting the tech products out there, aren't they?
It's just an Etch-a-Sketch.
The Daily Mash is a spoof website. So it's basically, you know, it's going back to the... It's obviously, if you look at some of the other articles, it gives you a sensible thing. But it's obviously just but what it does, it takes a story that's in the news and then just tweaks and pulls it in a gentle direction.
Lido launching a £12.99 tablet. Let's see.
The Lido. A
spokesman said the kids want a tablet, granny wants a tablet, but we all know it'll be gathered and dust in a cupboard in a month.
8-year-old Tom Booker said, "I played with it for about 20 minutes, got bored, smashed it over my younger brother's head and broke the screen," which is exactly what I'd have done with an iPad Mini. But, obviously, Mark, you're the go-to guy for these sort of budgety ones because you were the Asus launch where they had some budget ones. I mean, I've been a bit insulated on this. I haven't actually looked at any of these cheap ones. I mean, are they any good? I mean, are you sort of limited to sort of browsing and or, I don't know, you know, continuously updating your Facebook status.
What do you want to do with it? I mean, it's a serious question, but I think that, yeah, they're perfectly functional for the target audience.
Yeah, the ones I've seen, they're not going to win any benchmark tests, but the idea is that they're cheap and they work, and they're for people who are just kind of casual users. So you might find them a bit slow and inconvenient, but most the people that are going to buy them you probably think they're great. I mean, I had a look at...
I don't know, Steve, since I put iOS 7 on my iPad, I find that a bit slow and inconvenient, so I don't know if I miss out on that.
Well, I've only got direct experience of a Nexus 7, which that I own, and that's fantastic.
That's not a cheap one, though, is it? That's kind of
it is cheap when you look at it. Compare it to an iPad Mini.
Yeah, well, that's just because they're overpriced, aren't they?
I'd love to know the average amount, though, of apps that were actually put on and used, and the amount of memory that tended to be used by media, and in comparison to the proportion of the market who literally just use it like a netbook. Just with a touch screen, just to browse, just for quick browsing purposes and that kind of thing.
I think there's an awful lot of people who just do that.
I was going to say, because, you know, when you say, 8 gig and that kind of thing, it sounds low, but there's a huge amount of the market who just want something quick and convenient just for, you know, browsing the net in short bursts. Asset,
Facebook, Twitter, job done for most people.
So that wraps up tech news. Come back in a sec when we go to movie news. So moving on to movie news to wrap up the podcast. What's been at the cinema, Steve?
Well, Phil, this week I saw Captain Phillips. Now, just to be clear, this is not a film about Captain Mark Phillips, the ex-husband of Princess Anne. This is a film about Captain Phillips, who was the captain of the Maersk Alabama, which is a container ship that was hijacked by Somali pirates back in 2009. I vaguely remember the story at the time. You know, it didn't pick a lot of attention, but I do remember it. And it's been made into a film by Paul Greengrass. Now, if you've seen any of Paul Greengrass's films, particularly Bloody Sunday and United 93, you'll know that he is incredibly good at creating almost documentary feel within a feature film and making things just look very, very realistic. And Captain Phillips has got to be, you know, possibly his best film so far. It is staggeringly realistic, and you know, you're watching it and it's like you're there at times. He just captures the film so well, and Tom Hanks, who stars as Captain Phillips himself, is absolutely brilliant in it. It's easily one of the best performances Hanks has given in a long time. The film itself centers, I mean, and to be honest, it's reasonably even-handed because it does actually give you a bit of backstory behind the Somali pirates themselves and why they're doing it, which is actually quite interesting in itself. Obviously, most of it centers on the ship, the hijacking, and then the aftermath. I've got to say, the last 40 minutes were some of the most nail-biting, tensest scenes I've ever seen in a movie. I was absolutely, I mean, even though I had a rough idea how it ended, I kind of know what happened at the end from the news stories at the time, but I was still on the edge of my seat. Absolutely brilliant. Rara filmmaking, to be honest, from Paul Greengrass. Absolutely brilliant. Fantastic cast as well. I mean, the guys playing the Somali pirates, you know, I'm assuming relatively unknown actors, just really looked the part, really performed brilliantly. Hold up against, you know, Hanks giving one of the best performances of his career. The rest of the cast are also excellent in terms of the rest of the crew on the ship. They've also got the crew of the US frigate that's kind of trailing them. There's a Navy SEAL team involved. And Greengrass is very good at casting people who either are playing themselves or people who just look and sound like they're real people, even if they are actually actors, which is quite a rare skill, I think. The production values were superb. It's just a really, really well-made, nail-biting thriller. And it's very much like Apollo 13. I mean, again, it was Tom Hanks was in that, but that's a film where you kind of knew how it ended, but you're still on the edge of your seat throughout much of the film, you know, as they try and battle against various problems on the spaceship. So this is the same kind of thing, you know, trying to get Captain Phillips himself free from the Somali pirates, and how that's done is absolutely nail-biting. I really enjoy it. I think it's one of the best ones I've seen this year, easily. I'd strongly recommend you go and see it. And it's a real big screen experience too.
Right, Steve, so what score do you give that?
Oh, I'll give that 9 out of 10, definitely.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, okay.
You could have done a pirate joke, at least.
I don't know any.
Not those kind of pirates, though. It's not. No one's got an eye patch.
But did you hear about
a big hat? There's no pirate.
Did you hear about the Women's Institute? This was hilarious. One of these captains who got hijacked by these Somali pirates, He's been going around the UK doing talks on what actually happened and what it was like and so on. And this group from the WI got the wrong end of the stick, and they turned up for this session with a guy. They were all dressed in pirates. I mean, give the guy credit. He had the good humour to stand and have his photo taken with them all dressed up as pirates.
Women dressed up as pirates.
Yes.
To be fair, I don't think there's much in the way of peg legs, swords, and, you know, skull and crossbones with the Somali pirate fraternity. I mean, if they turned up wearing threadbare vests and brandishing AK-47s, he might have found it a bit more stressful, but, you know, I think he could have just about held it together.
I've got to say that there wasn't a parrot in sight in Captain Phillips. I was quite upset about that. It could have done with a few cannons, actually. And
Johnny Depp chewing the scenery somewhere.
No, God, no. No more Depp, please. I had to take a character that was funny in small doses and then make it really outstay its welcome.
Well, just for Steve, breaking news has just come through in my email inbox. Steve, you'll love this. 3D Blu-ray, DVD release, and normal Blu-ray release on December 19th. One Direction, This Is Us, the must-have stocking filler, hits Blu-ray.
Well, speaking as a man who has made it his life's mission to buy every native 3D film available, I'm going to have to buy that bastard now, aren't I? Plus, I hear it's actually quite good. Speaking of breaking film news, because, and this is Mark B that sent me the link, which got me quite excited, to be honest, is they're going to be making a sequel to Army of Darkness, which was the third Evil Dead movie, with the original star...
Bruce Campbell.
Oh, no, I was about to say Bill Campbell. I thought, that's not his name. Bill Campbell's a completely different actor.
Get out.
Thank you. And obviously director, writer, Sam Raimi. So that could be good news.
Also, breaking news of the bad kind, X-Men, Future Past, shot at 48 frames a second.
Yes, I mean, it's been sort of released, the news has been leaked out that all announced that they did actually shoot it at 48 frames a second. However, Fox have been extremely cagey and have said they're not releasing the film at the cinema at 48 frames a second, which I find quite interesting. Now, I'm beginning to wonder whether the incredible negative backlash against The Hobbit in HFR this time last year, well, last December, has some impact on Fox's decision to not release the film in the cinema at 48 frames a second.
So where are they going to release it at 48 frames?
Well, their claim now is they're just future-proofing it for some future date. They got it at 48 frames a second.
But well, at like some expensive point in the future, we're suddenly going to want to watch it in a way that makes it look awful. There's an interesting sort of future-proofing that, isn't it?
Never underestimate the stupidity of people. There'll be people that... Well, there's lots of people I know who thought The Hobbit looked fantastic at HFR.
Yeah, they need to be taken out and shot in front of the family.
Were you nice to their guide dogs?
I refuse to talk to them anymore because of that. Other interesting news is that Ben Wheatley, strangely, has been chosen, is directing the opening episode of Peter Capaldi's Doctor Who. So the first episode of the new series will be directed by Ben Wheatley, which is a strange choice given he made Kill List and Sightseers and A Field in England.
Oh, right. I'd never heard of the guy. So that's the films he's done, is it?
Yes. Kill List, Sightseers, Down Terrace, A Field in England.
And that's exciting news because...
Oh, I actually think he's quite a good director. I actually met him at a film festival.
Right. Okay.
So it's good news because Steve can name drop.
Yeah, that's it. I thought there was something. There had to be something like that behind it. To, you know, a completely nameless director that nobody's ever heard of. But Steve's met him.
Not true. So, he's quite well known.
So we'll talk about it in the podcast.
He's actually a really funny guy, too.
Yeah. Did he live in Hong Kong as well?
Well, no, he's not
in Hong Kong. But he did tell an interesting story about the film Kill List. If you've seen Kill List, it's kind of a film that starts off as a hitman movie and then turns into more like a horror stroke remake of Wicker Man. And when he was trying to get funding for the film, he was getting a lot of interest from producers in the States because they thought the film was about a hitman who goes out and kills Satanists. Then they read the screenplay and told them to fuck off, apparently.
Haven't we already had a remake of The Wicker Man? And is it not... It might segue into one of the things that's also on this schedule thing here, in so much as it's a film that's so dreadful, it goes out the other end, and I regard it as compelling and necessary viewing for all. It's just so... It misses the mark so extraordinarily, it's just brilliantly watchable.
It's a film that's so bad that it even manages to stand out in amongst Nicolas Cage's filmography when he's done some pretty poor films in the past. Although I'm not a big fan of The Wicker Man, even the original one I think is overrated, personally.
I saw that far too young. I was terrified.
I always loved the bloke who on the internet naturally who meshed the you know, the Visit Scotland adverts. He meshed the music and the commentary to images from the Wicker Man, and it's absolutely magnificent. Please feel free to talk amongst yourselves whilst I'm battling.
There's nothing else. We've got to the bottom of the list now, haven't we?
That's it. We've reached the end of the list.
I've got a theory with Nicolas Cage, which is if his hair looks normal, it'll be a terrible film.
So only when he's got mad hair?
Yeah. If you look, when it looks like kind of hair plugs, stroke, Steven Seagal, pube head, then it'll be fairly decent.
I thought it was just a basic 1-in-5 ratio.
Oh, I think that's a bit generous.
Yeah, because he's got long mad hair in Con Air, and that's a great film.
Where does Ghost Rider sit in this, where he doesn't have hair but his head is on fire?
don't talk about the film.
How the hell did Ghost Rider get a sequel? Because the first one was bloody awful.
I'll tell you why, because he's
Scotland
a big fan,
might surprise
actually.
You. There's more than one way to see our sights. And hear our sounds. We've always done our own thing.
Just imagine and followed our own lead address at this point.
You don't have to join a club here. Join a club. And our welcome is warm. Very warm. So this year, surprise yourself. Visit Scotland.
Yeah, I'll watch it after the podcast because it's not very funny for people who are listening, is it really?
Oh,
I thought we'd done took a while. Well.
So, is there anybody else you want to talk about in this podcast that you've met, Steve, and you just want to name drop?
Russell Crowe.
Yeah, right.
Have you?
No, he hasn't.
Sat next to him on a flight from LA to LA.
I did not.
I did. Yeah, I had a cold too. I caught it.
Well, you've caught Russell Crowe's cold.
I've caught Russell Crowe's cold. Yeah.
That is some claim to fame.
Yeah. I'm a storyteller. my stories must be told. Right, desert island movies. Let's finish off on this one. Let's be quick on it. You're stuck on a desert island, Mark Botwright. Which film?
We wonder what Mark's going to say. It's going to be Shogun Assassin.
Don't spoil it.
He'll let him see it. Jesus.
Right, only one film.
You can have a couple.
It can't be Shogun Assassin.
God knows where you're going to get the Blu-ray player, the TV, and the power to, yeah. You know. Let's just go with it.
Right. What? One, Shogun Assassin. number two, A Better Tomorrow Part 2. Not one, two.
And the one where his twin brother turns up.
Yes, the one where his twin brother turns up. I don't care. If you can find me the original edit of it, I'd be very pleased as well. As this is a magical island.
I don't know either of these films.
So let's go Ed. Ed, what would you have?
I'd suppose Castaway would be quite handy for some hints and tips. Maybe they could give me a volleyball to befriend as well. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be even more depressing though? You're stuck on a desert island and the only way to get away from this reality is to watch
Tom Hanks film.
You're talking about the Tom Hanks one or the one where Madonna has got no kit on for most of it and she's
About the Tom Hanks. I did sponge the Madonna one from my mind.
Not Madonna, Amanda Donahoe, I said.
Oliver
Reed, isn't it?
Yeah, Oliver Reed,
I'd forgotten about that. And then I suppose because it manages to pass 3 hours at a time. Apocalypse Now Redux would be my... I genuinely love that film. I love all it stands for. Alternate between the original Apocalypse Now and the Redux version, but today I'm in a Reduxy sort of mood, so I'll say Redux.
Mr. Hodge.
I'd find it really depressing, you know. I don't like watching movies again and again. So it's not a particularly good question.
You'd feel guilty as well, because I'm assuming Desert Island is going to be sunny, nice sandy beach.
Every day you get bored. You fancy a film every now and then, wouldn't you?
You're going to have this. I mean, what kind of TV are you going to have? Because you're going to get a lot of reflections of this screen.
Yeah, a curved one.
It's no good.
That's when you need a curved television.
I want a projector, not a television.
How are you going to use a projector on a desert island?
It's not going to work.
Cinema out of black material. Dye some sails from the shipwreck black. Yeah, and bits of bamboo and stuff to make a frame.
You should do this for the new site, Phil, Steve, and the showcase bit.
That's what we should do, right?
Desert island.
We should get my flight to the middle of nowhere.
Something.
There's a feature. Can you? Right, so this ship that you were shipwrecked on conveniently had black sails.
Well, it could be the pirates.
I think it's more likely it would have been if it was pirates, Steve, it more likely to have been a black, rigid, inflatable boat, which I suppose you could carcass and
a couple of AK-47s.
Yes.
Well, that's make your own movies then, couldn't
you? Old school pirates from the Pirate Bay. They come out, you know, black sail. You know, inside, obviously, there is a projector on board the ship, a selection of Blu-rays and a player, and also a bicycle for generating electricity to run all this. So you have to watch the film whilst pedaling like f**k, and then basically you can enjoy yourself. So
yeah, you live in a strange world.
Use a screen too. You could use one of the non-black sails for that.
Anyway, Mark, you were saying...
Films that I can watch again and again. Treasure of the Sierra Madre, really love that movie. And Fargo.
Well, I suppose if you were there boiling to death, a film set in the
sky. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It might just cool me down a bit.
Well, one of mine is Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yes, I'm with you on that.
And yeah. Trainspotting.
One of Michael Caine's best performances.
It actually is one of his best performances.
It is, isn't it?
I think it genuinely is one of the best performances he's ever given on film. Strangely, it's in a Muppet film, but that doesn't detract from the fact it's actually a brilliant performance and he plays Scrooge really well.
Yes. Be wrong watching a Christmas film in the sun, though.
Oh, no, it could be Christmas every day. You're your own boss, then. You can do whatever you like.
We don't know. We've not said where this desert island is, have we? It could be anywhere.
It could be. You're f***ed if it's off the coast of Scotland.
Yeah, if it's a Hebridean island.
Alaska.
Do want cinema.
Well, you keep warm with the wicker, man. That's it.
I don't know. I have to say, it's my... I mean, even the idea of visiting one of these tropical island resorts is pretty much my idea of a waking hell.
I was
head of the escape committee by day three.
Yeah, I was looking at Richard Branson's place, you know, Necker. It just looks like... horrible. Wouldn't have wanted to live there, would you?
I don't know. I'd like to visit it, but then I'd like to go after about a day and a half. I think I'd have done everything on the island, figuratively speaking.
He's got a project.
Coconuts, palm trees.
And
monkeys.
I my idea of a great holiday is somewhere where I can eat and drink lots and lots of different things that are, you know, and also not artificially brought together. They just, you know, they're there to be sampled. They're what the locals are busy eating. That's great for me. Whereas just sitting on a sun lounger going, oh, look, that sea's very blue. Oh, look, a turtle, something. No, I can't.
I've got to agree with you, Ed. My idea of a good holiday is either a road trip and actually get away from, you know, the big touristy trap places and actually go and see the place. In history and that kind of thing. I'm interested in that. Go and see old castles or whatever, or yeah, you know, nice scenery to shoot and so on. That's my idea.
I mean, my wife mentioned just in passing, obviously, since my son was born, it's like, oh, we've got an excuse to visit Disneyland Paris, and it's like, oh, you have. I'm not. I would. Yeah, you know, there are crimes I would commit to not have to go there. So
the crimes you'll commit.
Is that just Disneyland Paris, or does that count for Florida and LA as well?
The whole thing. I hate theme parks on a level I can't easily describe. And ones that are that busy, oh God, I am literally just shuddering.
So that would drive you to mass murder, would it? That's what we're pushing.
They're just hateful. All about, you know, it's like I went to Alton Towers once. I think the only 11-year-old that went to Alton Towers and wanted to go home by lunchtime.
You know, I've never been to Disneyland, and I lived next to two of them, or near two.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I've never been to one either, but I haven't lived anywhere near one. So, I mean, I did like the way that obviously when Disneyland Paris opened up, when it was called Euro Disney, in a spectacular move, wasn't it initially, you couldn't buy alcohol anywhere on the park premises? Are you having a laugh? A theme park in France where everyone is sober by enforcement? No. Sorry.
I got a friend who was actually evicted from Disneyland, the one in south of LA. he was evicted by the Disneyland police. The Mickey Mouse police arrested him and kept him in Mickey Mouse jail for a bit because he was smoking a joint. And he was hauled up in front of the Mickey Mouse chief of police and was told that we at Disneyland are very disappointed that you had to resort to artificial stimulants to have a good time here. And then they threw him out.
That's...
Are they all dressed as mascots?
Well, in my imagination, yes. Do they have an armed response unit? Because that would make my day if they turned up in the big black SWAT gear with Mickey Mouse ears on
top. A helicopter.
In my imagination, that's how they look. They have got Mickey Mouse ears. Right.
Think about this often.
But it's in the same way, isn't it, that Disney is now, that was it, the fourth largest navy on the planet? And again, that brings to mind something completely different. But yeah, you know, I mean, actually,
it would be worth having a war with them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be hard to see how they get on. I have to say, cruise ships, that's another idea of another hell holiday there.
Oh, Jesus. I'd jump overboard.
It just strikes me as especially pointless. I mean, it's conversely, I quite like the idea of, you know, the Queen Mary 2, the actual Atlantic crossing, because you start in point A and finish somewhere completely different, which is in itself quite cool. But the idea that you just bimble round, trapped on a ship with thousands of people, most of whom are very close to death.
Just circling the Dublin Bay.
You know, I mean, it's almost the stage where the Costa Concordia would have been quite interesting, because at least there was something to do while the ship sank and everyone flailed around panicking.
Yeah, if you'd spent the week before on the rock climbing bit, you'd have been fine. Anyway, we missed Steve's Desert Island films. What are they?
Oh, right. Well, based upon repetition here, because I think if I've only got a couple to watch over and over again, I'm probably going to go with Now and I and Spinal Tap.
I would have said with Now and I if I remembered that. I'm having that now.
Now they drink too much.
All right, okay, I'll give you with Now and I. Well,
there's
and
more than one copy. Tap. We can have one.
Well, no, but in interest of having more than one bloody film, I'll go for Spinal Tap and Midnight Run as two films I love watching.
No, you've made your choices. You're now on the desert island with Mark.
Regretting.
Steve. I'm sorry, Steve. The plane to take you to your island with these two films has already been dispatched. You can't change
it. I thought I was a shipwreck.
The mysterious pirate ship with black sails.
Yeah, it just happened to have a Stuart screen on board and a JVC projector. And what are you going to do during the day? Oh, you'll just do what you normally do, isn't it? Nothing, twiddling your thumbs.
I think that'd be quite a lot of masturbation if I'm stuck on my own on a desert island.
You'd need to make
That's
sure
what I'm saying. Why would you change your routine from what it is?
That's no different from normal life, sadly. But yeah,
it's more. Sorry, Steve. I was just thinking about you. You're on a desert island. You know,
sorry, that just sounds.
Yeah, that in itself is very erotic. But no, obviously, you'd need to make sure that you had enough of these black sails left over to knot as handkerchiefs over your head to avoid being, you know, burnt to a crisp.
I wouldn't get burned, though, would I? Because I'd be sat inside my boiling hot, presumably, at this point.
You burn very easily. And the only reason I know that is we've done CES and stuff. A little bit of sunshine, your head turns orange.
We must remember to bring a hat.
I'm going to be shipwrecked today. I must remember to bring my hat.
I was talking about CES, but yeah. Oh. Well, no, the shipwreck's fine because I could wear a pirate hat, wouldn't I? It'd be great. I'd be going, war!
There were pirates.
Pirate Steve.
How have you ended up shipwrecked?
Presumably it was on a ship. Island. It was all yo-ho-ho and many bombs.
But the ship crashes. I mean, if there are pirates there,
you end up on desert island.
Don't they take you?
Actually, can I swap my Muppets Christmas Carol for a Nando's, branch of Nando's?
And presumably the staff.
The staff to serve me as well, yeah.
No, there's no one behind the counter. You just stand there dinging the bell.
For eternity.
Yeah.
With our luck, Philip, with Nando's, we went to at Brent Cross where they had no chicken.
That did happen. Like, you can come in, but we've got no chicken.
Never successfully been. I've never successfully eaten a Nando's. I don't understand. It's an
ungodly
hybrid between a fast food restaurant and a restaurant. And if I want fast food, I will visit a fast food hostelry. I do not expect to be involved in any part of the.
What's the difficult bit? Getting off your ass, going over the counter and saying, "I want some chicken," and then going and sitting back down again.
because that's what happens in KFC. That's the principle there. In a restaurant, I want someone to come feign interest in what I have to say and then leave me out of the logistics altogether. And fundamentally, it just seems to be an excuse to sell. The more I look at it, it just seems to be a reason to sell more and more absurd sauces in supermarkets with cholesterol.
Oh, well, you'll not be coming to the Christmas party because that's just been held at Nando's.
Yeah, but isn't it being held at Nando's?
Before we're moving on to Alton Towers.
Yep. You're fucked.
A Nando's at Alton Towers. I think that's your idea of hell.
Yes. We're not having a normal traditional Christmas party where we all sit on our own in our respective houses with a mince pie and a cup of tea and a glass of sherry or something like that.
I think that's what it'll be like, really.
Yeah. That's normally my wearing Christmas party. Hat. Sitting in the corner wearing a hat with a party popper.
What were your two choices, Phil?
Well, I swapped Christmas Carol for a Nando's branch, and train spotting was the other one.
Oh, yeah, train spotting.
So I'm gonna spend my life eating fried chicken, watching junkies.
Eating fried chicken, smoking cigarettes, and watching a bunch of junkies do the same thing. Did they on Desert Island Discs? Do they still make you take a copy of the Bible with you? Because I really don't want that. I have a different book.
On what?
Well, in Desert Island Discs, they used to say you were stuck on an island.
I don't think they do now.
No, and one of them was the copy of the
Bible and the works of Shakespeare. Is it not? I thought that was
two works.
Yeah, because everyone always just picks them.
Then you can have two books.
They must have dropped the Bible.
Dropped the Bible now on the ground.
They must have done.
And replaced it by the Ray Mears survival guide.
Yeah, that'd be better.
50 Shades of Grey.
God Delusion by Richard Dawkins. You can tell that.
I've got to be honest, much as I have no time at all for organised religion, I think the King James Bible is a better read than Richard Dawkins. Just saying.
You know. No, read Dianetics, L. Ron Hubbard.
Or Battlefield Earth.
No, that's fiction.
As is the Bible.
We're treading a thin line between fact and reference, reference and fiction here.
Right, I think we're getting at dodgy ground now.
Oh, yes, of course, they are quite litigious, aren't they?
Anyway, well, sadly, we've reached the end of yet another AV Forums weekly podcast. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. And all I need to do now is thank Mark Botwright.
We ate sand.
Mark Hodgkinson.
I haven't got a line.
Ed Selly.
Just go forward.
You had to do one thing, Mark. One thing.
Give me that baby, you warthog from hell.
Ed Selly.
Chairs, you got a dinette set. No chairs, you got dick.
And Steve Withers.
Son, you know you got a panty on your head.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Don't forget to bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news and video. Plus, why not leave us a rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the show? It takes 2 minutes to sign up and leave us 5 stars. So if you would be so kind to do that, we'd forever be in your debt. Don't forget, the new AV Forums is also coming soon, so keep an eye on the homepage for the details on when that is going to happen, and it is coming very soon. So all I need to do now is say thanks very much for listening. I'm Phil Hinton, and we'll see you next Wednesday.